It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Wash your hands.
Yes, good afternoon. Hope you are in good form today. If you feel like keeping me company and joining in the chats, 51551 for your text or ray@rte.ie for your emails. It's definitely a day for the thermal knickers and the sunglasses, isn't it? I mean, sun shining, but it is bitter out there. And I know some parts of the country saw a little smattering of snow over the weekend, a little bit in Dublin here, but by and large, it was pretty nice. And nice to come back to a 4-day week as well, wasn't it? It always helps. And in fact, I was reading over the weekend about the new trial that's happening in Spain, the first of its kind in the world, where the government are spending 50 million over the next 3 years piloting whether an official 4-day week would be viable or not. So essentially what they're doing is they're getting companies who are interested to sign up, and they've committed to covering the costs of any fallout or the changes so that the scheme has a proper chance of getting up and running. And we've discussed this on the radio before, and it's been a topic of conversation, but I think never more so has it kind of come to the fore as it has this year. I mean, New Zealand are looking at what Spain are doing now, as is the UK, as is Germany. And look, for this pilot to work, it will mean seeing a significant reduction in hours with no less salary and the same productivity output or better. And there's just talk about people's mental health. People are talking about, I mean, we've got the rural development scheme, the rural working scheme here in this country, work-life balance, climate change. It is gaining ground globally. So let me know what you think. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. And I don't know, like the obvious, I would be for a 4-day week. I think, you know, you're limited with your time, better productivity can happen when you're not commuting, all of that. But the obvious argument to me is, if we're all coming out of a global recession, is it not going to mean we have to all work more, not less, to get back on our feet again? Anyway, let me know what you think. Connor Pope will be in a little later with his Price Watch problem. And he also had a good piece in the Times yesterday about the worst phrases from the pandemic, from meaningful to maskne. And he's going to be sharing those with us a little later on. And in the same vein, content creator Chris Clifford, he has a TikTok account, Dereal Chris Clifford. Like, he did something similar on TikTok over the weekend about phrases people are going to wreck our heads with when lockdown is finally over. I thought it was gas. Have a little listen.
Post-COVID sayings that I'm already sick of. And in fairness, drinking in the house was a lot cheaper. Like,
come here, are you going out tonight? Man, I don't care if it's Wednesday, and I don't care if you're working at 7 o'clock in the morning. You gave out about the lockdowns for long enough.
Back to work and all now, like, and you know, you'd miss the lockdowns.
And come here, did you ever get the vaccine in the end?
It's weird enough going into Lidl without the mask. Still looking over my shoulder when there's a group of 5 of us when I see a guard, like,
oh, well, 2 metres?
He was freaking out about the cinemas when they close. But you know, I haven't been there since they opened. I reckon we have an old Zoom quiz for the crack. You know, if it's just me, but wouldn't you feel naked without the mask?
Yes, all that to look forward to. And you know what else we've got to look forward to? Wondering why in the name of all that is sacred did we buy half the crap we did over the last year? Sarah Maria Griff threw down the gauntlet on Twitter saying, all right, lads, what was your household's most deranged pandemic purchase? Come on, time to lay it bare. I'm sitting here with my beloved copper pink ice maker and I love her with my life. Tell me your weird end of the world item, shame. And that tweet went viral and got a lot of hilarious answers. I have to say, two things sprung to mind for me. I bought a debobbler about 2 weeks ago. If you don't know, you do not know what you're missing out on. I saw somebody on Instagram. It is the most therapeutic thing in the world. This little ball. And I've debobbled jumpers, I've debobbled the arm of the couch, I've debobbled coats, all sorts of bits and pieces. I'm like, where have you been all my life? So that was one for me that I'm very happy with. Probably the one that Porik will say was the worst lockdown purchase. Do you remember a year ago they closed the playgrounds? It was before everyone was going, just running into the house and closing doors. And we have a great playground across the road from us. And it was closed, obviously. And I went straight onto the internet looking for a swing and a slide. She was only two at the time, and couldn't find anything on Smiths, couldn't find anything anywhere. So eventually, after searching probably 695 on Google, I found this company up the north who said that they could deliver a swing and a slide. And 2 months later, this flatbed truck pulled up outside the house. And I kid you not, there were just 5 metre planks in the back of the truck that they left outside, and a bag of screws and nails, and just an instruction manual about how to put it all together. So that it took Porrick about, well, I won't say it, it took him longer than a week to make the hose. But literally, this wasn't an IKEA job where you had the instructions which told you that plank A went in and fitted nicely into plank B. No, this was saws, drills, nails, nail guns, glue. And it's still standing, I have to say. And she did, she got great mileage out of it. But would I order it again? Absolutely not. I also saw someone tweeting on the Twitter machine yesterday, which I just, it made me laugh because I could totally relate to it. You know, when you have that one fork or knife that's in the cutlery drawer and you take it out and you go, jeez, not this one again. Like, why do we not throw them out, or where do they come from? We have a knife at home and the handle, you can't actually even hold the handle. It's skinny and slippy, and it's like trying to butter your bread with one of those metal straws. It is so annoying. And I, for some reason, I don't just put it in the bin. It always goes back into the drawer. So let me know if you can relate to that. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Get me in your cutlery disasters and your pandemic purchases. What else did I spot? Yes, we love a bit of good news and happy news these days because we do need it. Big congratulations to Limerick musician Emma Langford. Emma got engaged at the weekend to her boyfriend Kennedy O'Brien, and she announced the news on Twitter, and it was great to see, and huge congratulations to you both. And Radio 1 listeners will know Emma because her album Sowing Acorns was album of the year here last year. But what caught my eye was the fact that Emma proposed to her partner. Right. So her Twitter post was like, he said yes. And it was all, if she got him a ring and it was beautiful and celebrated with her family and all that. Now, I know it's 2021 and you go, so what? But actually, you don't see it, or you don't hear about it happening that much. Women proposing to their partners. And I know a lot of it is because couples discuss the proposal in advance, and the element of surprise is maybe a thing of the past, but you don't see too many women proposing to men. And I just want to know why, and why are we not seeing more of it? And I'd love to know, did you propose to your boyfriend? We'd love to hear from women who booked the trend and who popped the question. How did you do it? Why did you do it? Were you sick of waiting? How did it work out? Are you still married? That's probably important. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Do you think more women should be doing it? Or are you a man who would like to be asked instead of having all the pressure on you? Yeah, I just thought it was one thing that struck me in a way that in this world we live in, it shouldn't have taken me by surprise as much as it did. But there you go. So let me know your thoughts on that. Paul has texted in here. I work in Derry and the company asked staff, would we like to work an extra hour per day, 8 to 6, and have the Friday off? We decided we would, and we've never looked back. A 3-day weekend every week. I don't have to take as many days off because I can do what I want at the weekend. That comes in from Paul. Anna saying, I bought an electric oyster opener. Can open 24 oysters in 3 minutes and no finger injuries. Magical. Good on you, Anne. Living lockdown like a boss, eating oysters left, right and centre. I love it. All right, we have our quiz of the day as well today, and we have an amazing prize this week coming from Faithleg Hotel in Waterford. So you can explore the sunny southeast with their coastal drives, beaches. Oh, I think all of us who don't live beside a beach are just looking forward to getting to the coast as soon as we can. There's cycling trails all there as well. I did the Waterford Greenway last year. It was amazing. So that is an amazing prize. It's a 2-night stay with breakfast on both mornings and dinner on one night of your choice in the award-winning Roseville Rooms restaurant. So fabulous prize. and you can visit faithleg.com for more information. But how do you enter? You answer this question. The head of the HSE says they're due to administer the 1 millionth dose of COVID vaccines this week. What is the name of the head of the HSE? So we are looking for the name of the head of the HSE. And to enter, you can phone 1850 715 900. That's 1850 715 900. We are going to get two people on the line after 4 o'clock, and you have to answer 5 questions, which are not that difficult. So nice way to win a nice weekend away for yourself and to have something to look forward to. Again, 1850 715 900. That is the number, and we are looking for the name of the HSE. So good luck with that. All right, let's get a bit of music. Came Here for Love. You might recognise that song. It is the theme tune for First Dates, actually. And I love it. It's a great running song as well. Jackie in Tipperary said, Catherine, I proposed to my husband 33 years ago. And yes, we're still happily married. Selma in Clare said, that is gas. I proposed to my husband on the last leap year. We were married and the following year, and Emma Langford sang for us the day after our wedding in Killaloo. So congratulations to Emma. And yes, if you're thinking of proposing to your partner, do it. You will get the engagement of your dreams. You see, there you go. We like to control. A lot of us ladies like to be in control. So no better opportunity for you to create the engagement that you want. Orla says, Catherine, I proposed to my husband 19 years ago. It was his way of sorting the issues after an argument that sealed the deal. Best question I ever asked. Still happily married, so says Orla. All right, keep them coming in. But for now, let's take a quick break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, before the break, I was talking about my new pastime, very exciting actually, of debobbling my jumper. While other people have been baking banana bread, other people have been taking up running, all sorts of new challenges during lockdown. But my next guest has taken it to a whole new level. And to tell me more, I'm joined from New York by Ray Byrne. Ray, how are you doing?
Good, Catherine. What's going on? How are you?
I'm really good. So before we actually talk about this incredible, mental, insane, exciting adventure that you are about to embark on, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, and you're living in the Big Apple now, right?
I am. I live in Brooklyn at the moment.
Okay.
yeah, so I'm from Kilmac in County Waterford originally. But I was actually born in the States. Mom and dad eloped to America at a very young age and just coincidentally happened to have me around that time here.
Okay.
So, and then we came back. Dad was deported when we were about 3, ended up all coming back to Ireland, kind of a classic Irish story, and then moved back to, my mom is from Kilmac in Waterford, so we came back to the village and they took over my grandfather's bar on Main Street, which was Keating's Pub. And then I grew up there. So playing sports, like classic little village in Ireland growing up.
Okay. And amazing, then when you moved back to the States, did you always kind of have a hankering to go back because you knew that you had a link there, or why New York? Or were you just like loads of your friends who were heading back?
Sorry. I first went back to San Francisco just because it was where I was born and I just kind of wanted to go back and see what that was. But New York was, my cousin was in kind of the same situation as I was. He had been born over here and then grew up at home in Kilmac. And he had moved back to New York. Our uncle lived in Philly. And so I came over to visit Stevie after college at home, and there was no great plan. I've been here 20 years.
Okay. You
know? New York always felt like home, though. People walk really fast, and I always just kind of fell into that slipstream.
Okay, and it is. It's an amazing city. I mean, I've visited many times and I've always kind of been envious of people who get to live a part of their life there. It's a tough city, though. I mean, it is very much, from my friends who live over there, it is a city and it's like it does exactly what it says on the tin. You work hard and you play hard. It is an intense place to be. And I know that you had a difficult time and that you had a bit of a battle on your hands with alcohol, with the drink.
Yeah, for sure. It's been a battle since I was pretty young, I suppose, kind of in that like 16 to 18 year old range, kind of starting to drink. And then, I mean, to put it simply, it's just, it kind of starts as you being wild and free, and then it just turns into it being really sad. And the only one that doesn't notice it is you, you know? Mm. So over the course of kind of going to college, getting into some kind of brushes with the law at home, and then staying out for days on end, drinking, and like you think you're a bit of a hero back then doing it, but you don't really kind of grasp the consequences down the line a little bit. And then drugs to keep the whole thing going, always like kind of searching for oblivion and the void, but fighting it every step of the way. And that's a kind of a strange oxymoron, but you're trying to stay up for days on end, but really you're just looking kind of for this nothingness. And that continued on for me to New York. And I mean, I'm functioning all the time as well. And I'm working in the bar business, which is, you know, everyone's kind of drinking all the time. And like you said, New York is just a hard party, hard work kind of place. And you're going to find lots of people who are like that here. So you fall in, your whole friend group is made up of the same kind of people. And it started to go off the rails for me a lot. You know, I was brought to hospital. I escaped hospital. I was got arrested multiple times. I was just very lucky and fortunate to not have gotten into worse trouble than I did. You know, I really kind of dodged a lot of bullets.
So you were trying to hold down. 20s. You were trying to hold down your job and, as you said, function while knowing that you did you know that you had a problem with alcohol before you walked in the door of AA?
No, I mean, the first time I gave up, I was probably 26, and I gave up because I was given an ultimatum by the person I cared most about. And then I kind of looked around, and it just, your life just starts to disappear around you and you don't really notice it per se. You know, it's you just kind of continuously moving forward, which is great for some things and not for others. And I had seen, so the first time I gave up kind of on my own, and I definitely had to realize at that point, I was like, oh, this is really, it's falling apart. You know, there's no one really left to turn to over here. And again, you're disconnected living in America, you know, and living, like you said, in a place as big as New York, you can kind of, there's always another job, you know, there's always a different set of people. Like you're not, it's very different from like where I grew up, where everyone would know your whole life. Whereas in New York, you can just be a nobody in 5 minutes. You know, you could change everything, which was very bad for that kind of lifestyle. And after giving up for a few years, that relationship I was in ended. And I was nearly 30 years old at that stage. And I just fell right back into it, 0 to 60. It's like you didn't like miss a beat. And that time, very bad, and kind of ended up in the gutter, no money, like still at the house, but it was like renting, but I just felt like I'd nowhere to turn. And at that stage, I went to AA for the first time. And that was, out of all this racing and the long runs and all these adventures, I think that like 5 block walk was probably the longest walk I've ever taken to get in the door over there. And I'd been putting it off for like a couple of months, but I got there and it was definitely the best decision I ever made. You know,
and you know what? That is, it's so poignant that you say that, because the first time you gave up, you were giving up really for somebody else, like that person who, your partner or that person that was in your life, whereas actually you needed to give up for you, and that was the only way it was going to work for you.
Oh, for sure. Like that, I didn't know that at the time, and when that clicked for me, it was totally, you have to do it for yourself. There's no one else. You can't do it for other people. You just, it won't stick.
So you pretty much then turned your life around. And I mean, it's very easy for me to say that, and I don't want to say it and sound glib, because I can imagine there were battles and there are probably still battles, and
yeah,
and that it's not an easy journey for anybody. And as you said, that long walk, those 5 blocks to get in to face the demons and turn, yeah, your life around. But you got into running. And when I say you got into running, I mean, this isn't just running around Central Park. You got into running in a big way, which tends to happen for a lot of people. It's, you know, you take away one part of your life and you fill it with another.
Yeah.
Mm.
I mean, if you look at like ultra running start lines, it's all like alcos, drug addicts, people with manic depression. There's a lot of people who it definitely is such a huge help, huge help.
Mm.
And for me, like the running really, really saved me, to be honest. I like when I had given up the first time, I was angry, you know, I was angry at myself. It suddenly kind of all hits home, you know, it's like the biggest hangover ever, where you're like, oh, I just wasted like 10 years of my life. What am I doing? Am I like, the potential is kind of, you'd think, oh, it's just wasted. So I started running and I was running hard. And again, it's the big thing for me was accepting that I can't do moderation. Like, as well as I had to do it for myself, you just have to accept you can't be like other people. You know, that I can't go out for 2 drinks. That's just not a thing for me. It's never going to be a thing, you know. I'll always want to stay out for like 2 days if I could get away with it.
And does that then come with the running as well then, Ray? Like, you don't just go for your 2K or your 20K. Like, it's always has to be big and it always has to be hard.
It definitely did at the start, yeah.
Okay.
I went from running. I used to go to Prospect Park in Brooklyn. And at that stage, I couldn't run around the park. It's only like 3 miles around the park. And I used to bring a box of Marlboro Lights with me and I would smoke one like halfway. And then the competitive nature starts to come back in and I'd see people were faster than me. And it all just clicked. I started to run like 6-7 days a week and a lot. And it just did me the world of good.
Mm. I mean, you completed the Marathon de Sable as well in the Sahara, which is like a 6-day, 250-kilometer ultra marathon. I mean, it's phenomenal what you've achieved and how you've turned your life around. So let's get to your next challenge. And I feel like I could talk to you all day, but I'm conscious that we've got limited time. So I want to talk about this, because this is pretty seismic and pretty special. So what are you off to do?
So in about 6 weeks, I leave New York to row a small boat home to Ireland.
Okay, so that didn't happen over a pint in a pub with a couple of mates. How did this happen for you? Like, where did the idea come from?
The idea kind of for me, again, it's like everything always gets a little bit more extreme.
Mm.
And it works for a lot of things. So from the like Marathon de Sable, which you're running in the desert, and I thought the next level up would just take away the safety nets, like no race organizers, something where you can literally, it's going out into the void again, you know, with Ireland being the goal at the end. And I read adventure things and different type of expedition stuff and explorers. And I had seen ocean rowing mentioned. And I was like, wouldn't it be amazing to just row a little boat from New York and all the kind of.
And is this with no sea rowing, boating experience?
Zero.
Okay. Okay. So it's you and how many others in this is like a proper tiny rowing boat. No, you don't have like trailing boats behind you in front of you.
No.
This is you guys on your own.
Yeah. There's okay. So there's 3 of us all together.
Okay. Okay. And describe the boat to me.
The boat is about 25 foot long.
Right.
It has 2 rowing positions. You're sitting right on the water like a rowing boat, but it also has a covered stern. So there's about 6 to 7 feet at the end where essentially it's a cabin. Now you can't even kneel up in the cabin, but that's where we'll sleep and be shielded from the elements. And it also creates the ability to self-right. So our little boat is going to get tossed in some big, big waves in the North Atlantic. So potentially big storms. There's big, big swell out there.
And how long a crossing are you talking about? Like, how long will you be at sea?
60 to 70 days.
Okay. Now, one of my favourite books is The Endurance, with which Charters Shackleton going down.
Yeah, amazing.
Amazing. Like one of my all-time heroes. And the way that he picked his crew, so he had his Tom Crean, like, and you have to be of a certain disposition. And I think a lot of people will resonate the fact that they've lived in the four walls, confined with the people they love.
Yeah.
But how small that space can get is, you know, everybody has felt that. And as I said, the people that you love most in the world can irritate the absolute hell out of you.
Yeah.
How do you pick two people and know that they're the right people to go on this adventure with?
I found both these guys on the internet about six months ago, and I've never met them.
Okay.
In person.
Okay. So you've been Zooming these guys.
Yeah. It was essentially like an Ernest Shackleton ad. It's like, I put an ad out on like an adventure forum, like need guy to row across the Atlantic. And this is who I got. Now, they're two young American guys. So originally my problem was I'd been scheduled to go last year and COVID torpedoed it.
Mm.
And the two guys who were going with me, it was an Egyptian and a guy and an Australian guy. And the visas with COVID and everything just toppled everything, because you can only leave in this small weather window in May to avoid the hurricanes kind of bookending on either side of the summer.
Okay.
So.
Okay. So it's called, if anyone wants to follow you or find out more, it's called The Hard Way Home. So it's thehardwayhome.com. You're The Hard Way Home on Instagram.
Yeah.
You are also doing this for an amazing cause. Quickly tell me about that.
So I'm raising money for the Kevin Bell Repatriation Trust, which is named after a young man, Kevin Bell, who was tragically killed here in New York at 26 years of age. It's about 8 years ago now. And his family, after he was killed in a hit and run in the Bronx, in the neighborhood I used to live in when I came over here, Forest Woodlawn, which is like the predominantly Irish neighborhood still in New York. And his family just had a very difficult time getting him back to Ireland and all the bureaucratic stuff and the red tape and everything else. And afterwards, they turned what was like an incredibly hard situation, Colin Bell, his father, and his whole family, into something where they've helped innumerous, like hundreds of people, like bring the bodies of Irish people back to Ireland that leave us in tragic circumstances. And I didn't actually know about the Kevin Bell Trust when I was trying to find like a charity to raise money for. And a friend of mine, Seamus, told me about it at the gym. And I was just like, well, that's it all.
It's so
everything
apt.
And I've together, right?
Yeah. And I've heard his dad interviewed. He's so impressive and what they've done. And because you don't think about the difficulties that families would have in a very sudden situation trying to repatriate bodies home. I think it's incredible. I think what you're doing is amazing. And just for you journeying across the Atlantic, and you're coming back into Waterford, right? Are you planning to land into Dungarvan, is it?
Planning to land into Dungarvan. Yeah, that's the plan.
That'll be amazing. What a way to return home.
Yeah.
And listen, good luck with all of it. Good luck with the training. Stay safe. I'm going to be keeping an eye on you now. As I said, it's called The Hard Way Home for anybody who wants to help out or donate. And you can find you guys on Instagram as well.
Catching the last thing, we're still trying to raise money for, we have guys, the Wonder Brothers in Wicklow, who want to do a documentary. So if there is an Irish sponsor out there, because we have a bunch of Americans and we have one amazing Irish sponsor, the Waterford Greenway Bike Hire, we'd love to add another one and document this properly. So if anyone's out there knows anyone, get in touch.
All right. Ray, lovely to talk to you. Congratulations on everything and stay healthy. Well done you.
Thank you. Bye now.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
It seems I've started a trend, lads. Lots of you interested in me debobbler. And where did I get it? And is it good? And how much was it? I think I got it on littlewoods.ie, I think. And it was €45. So, yeah, it is good. I mean, it's been, as I said, keeping me debobbling and keeping everything, couches, everything. I didn't know that you could do furniture as well. So there you go. But yeah, I think it was on littlewoods.ie. OK, so A cancer diagnosis is never going to be something that is easy to hear, but at the moment it's particularly hard for individuals and for families because of restrictions, and often patients are getting treatment on their own with nobody to turn to. So oncology nurses Anne-Marie Fay and Michelle Matthews decided they wanted to do something, and they started this podcast called Answers for Cancers to help people who are looking for answers, because when you get a diagnosis like that, you will have 1,000 questions. So Anne-Marie and Michelle joined me on the line now. Hey ladies, how you doing?
Hi, how are you?
Hi,
thanks for having us.
Thank you for joining me, and I'm not going to keep you long because I know that you are both working at the moment. You've stepped out to take this call, so I will be very conscious of not keeping you too long. Michelle, coming to you first, so where are you guys both working in the same place?
We were actually up until about 2 weeks ago, but we're based across the Mater and the Mater Private now.
Okay. And yeah. You're oncology nurses. What's your background, Michelle?
Yeah, so I've been working in oncology now for about the last 5 years between here and Abu Dhabi. And I came back from Abu Dhabi and I started working in a day oncology unit here in Dublin. And I've recently just started in clinical trials, so oncology clinical trials, which is really exciting. Yeah, I didn't have much knowledge on it before I began, but it's a really exciting and interesting area of oncology. So I'm delighted to be involved in it.
Okay, brilliant. And what about you, Anne-Marie?
Yeah, so I'm an oncology nurse about 3 years now, and then previously to that I trained in intensive care. So I actually trained in London, I worked in a neurological based intensive care, and then I moved home and worked in the cardiology intensive care. And then oncology was something I was always going to transition into, so I moved into oncology then about 3 years ago and have absolutely loved it ever since. So yeah, it's a great area to be in. It's very fast moving and it's ever changing, but it's an exciting area to be in, and I've made great friends. So yeah, it's been brilliant so far.
And have you guys been mates for years, or did you meet each other through nursing? Or
yeah, no, we actually just met each other through nursing. We were working in an oncology unit and met each other and just kind of clicked straight away. And we both have similar values. We're really, really passionate about what we do and about oncology. So yeah, the idea, kind of we were talking about the idea for a good while, and initially it was kind of more nursing based to kind of give a little bit more support to nurses, because as you know, it's a really busy job and oftentimes it can be quite hard to motivate yourself to, I suppose, read the latest articles or keep up to date with stuff. So we wanted to kind of provide a little bit of extra support. But then as the pandemic hit, we seen that actually patients need a little bit of extra support, and the idea of the podcast would transfer really nicely over to supporting patients and families more so. So yeah, we just came together, and yeah, it's been, so far it's been really successful, and we're absolutely delighted to be working with each other. Michelle's an absolute dream to work with, and I feel very, very blessed to be her friend and colleague. So
that's lovely.
Well, I think the one thing is the pandemic has made us all almost like a family, because for a lot of people we weren't able to go home to our own families. So we all have to kind of step up and nearly be like families here for each other. And I think a lot of people around the country that are working in hospitals and are on the front line will probably be able to identify with that a lot as well. So people have become really, really close. And it's great. We've seen a huge psychological support to each other here in this hospital.
And I have to say, Michelle, you know, just thinking about people who are going in and getting their treatments, as you said, there is that with restrictions now with COVID, it has changed the oncology wards, I'd imagine, on a day-to-day basis. Patients coming in, not having people with them, not having the support, probably frightened out of their cotton picking minds. So try and kind of talk through what it's like now on the oncology wards for people.
Absolutely. Well, I think initially at the beginning of the pandemic, it was terrifying for people because, like you said, clinics went online, they were coming in on their own. But actually, as time has gone on now, and that's our new normal, and I know everybody is hearing the new normal all the time, but, you know, we've had to really be there for our patients a lot more than we ever had before, because patients were coming into clinics for appointments and they were completely on their own, and they didn't have that family member or that friend with them that were able to, you know, pick up on other bits of information. So that's really where the podcast came from. We wanted to be able to put out information there that everybody is able to listen to. So whether you're a patient that's just been diagnosed, or whether you're a family member or a loved one who's going through it with somebody, that you can listen to the podcast and get some understanding of the conversations that are happening in the day oncology unit or are happening in the consultant's room.
And Anne-Marie, I listened to the podcast over the weekend. I have to say, It is absolutely brilliant because I luckily and very gratefully have no personal experience of cancer. I've had friends and family members, yes, and it's the subject matters that you deal with. So talk us through some of the episodes where you discuss different things and how you decide on the topics, because I was listening to it going, oh my God, if this person, if I was able 3 years ago to direct this person to this podcast, and then I listened to another one and you had a great expert on, I think it was psychologist, talking about how you tell your children about cancer. And I just thought it was, because I'd imagine going down for you, I'd say you're sick to death of telling your patients who come in to stop Googling and Dr. Google, because you can just go down the rabbit hole of too much information, wrong information. And whereas this is very accessible and it's driven by experts and fact.
Yeah, absolutely. I think like you covered an awful lot of important points there. I think like our initial concept was to cover each type of cancer and break it down and explain the ins and outs and like a little bit of the scientific part into layman's terms. But actually, like Michelle said, over the last year, 2 years with the pandemic, we've really got to know our patients a lot more deeply than we ever have before. And we've really been led by them, really, in terms of picking our topics. And the episode on how to tell your children, like we know that 25% of all people that are diagnosed with cancer, there's a child under the age of 18 within those households. So it's really, really prevalent and it's so important. And oftentimes we see patients, it's a huge stress and a burden for them. And it's kind of just empowering people with the information that they need to deal with their day-to-day life back home. You know, sometimes it's not the actual diagnosis that's stressful, it's managing their family at home. And we're very aware of that. So any help or topic that we can provide some support in, we will absolutely do that. So yeah, like you said, we're covering the actual types of cancers and risk factors and all those kind of things with consultants, but also just as important topics like supportive topics with psychotherapists and occupational therapists and specialist nurses and whatever patient really needs.
And Michelle, I know there is so much support there, and now support for cancer patients has to be thought about and delivered in a different way. There's a lot less human contact, really. There's a lot of Zooms and there's a lot of all of that. But can I ask you, and you clearly the two of you love what you do, but has it been very difficult for you? Because I suppose you've had to take up personally, I mean, you've had to take on a support network in a way, or support being a supportive role in a way that probably you had to up your game with it, if you know what I mean. And that has that taken a personal toll on you?
Yeah, I suppose it's impossible for it not to. I mean, now that we're further, we're nearly a year at it at this stage, it's much easier. And I know nurses and healthcare workers and anyone working on the front line, you know, you're so adaptive to these things because you have to be. But it's difficult for it not. You know, there was a lot of time where we went through shorter breaks and no holidays and annual leave and stuff. But this is what has to be done, and there will be an end to it at some point, and I think we'll all enjoy that when it comes. But, you know, it's given us, like Anne-Marie said before, it's brought us a lot closer with our patients, and we now realise exactly what they need, because maybe before when they were coming in and they were sitting or talking to a friend or a family member that was beside them, they're now opening up and speaking to us. So it's great for us with regards to the podcast, because we now know, you know, in more detail what needs to be covered, which maybe we didn't realise before. So it's definitely has had a lot of positives, but it hasn't been without its stresses as well.
Well, I just think you are brilliant, as does Brenda in Castleknock, who's texted in here to say, Michelle and Anne-Marie looked after me twice over the last 5 years when I had breast cancer treatment. They are both absolutely wonderful, caring nurses who made my days easier on the ward. And I would say for that one woman, there are so many women who would say the same to all our oncology nurses. You're just absolutely unbelievable. You're fabulous. And this is a simple, it's Answers for Cancers podcast. It's a simple name. It's brilliant. But it, again, it's just like, it was one of those, why hasn't anyone thought of doing this sooner? So it takes people to do it and get up and do it, and you've done it. So best of luck with it. And I know for people, you can get it wherever you get your podcasts. And there's a further resource as well for patients, and that you wanted me to mention, it's familycancersupport.ie.
Yeah, it's actually a website, a new website that's been developed by a patient, and it was basically reflective on his experience and what he wished he knew before he started his cancer treatment. So it's just tips and tricks from a person that's been through it, and a really good support then for families as well if they don't really know what to help with or where to go. It's really really simple, basic information, but really, really useful as well. So okay. Familycancersupport.ie.
Okay. And just to say, you're doing this in your spare time as well, in your free time,
yeah.
Given your own. I can say no more. You're brilliant, ladies. Listen, go back to work, and thank you from
so
everybody
much.
For what you're doing. You're amazing.
Thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you so much. Take care.
The Ray
bye.
Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
You can keep your texts coming in to 51551 or ray at rte.ie. Lots of love for Michelle and Anne-Marie, our oncology nurses that I was chatting to before the break. Connor Pope joins us once again. Connor, how are you? Hello,
hi,
hello.
Hi, Catherine. How are you getting on?
I am good. I'm good. I can hear you loud and clear. How are you keeping these last few weeks? You're in good form.
But you know what? Good form might be a stretch.
Okay.
I think like everybody, it's a struggle to get through what we hope is the kind of the last leg of the horrible times we've all been through. But, you know, we're all still here and that's the main thing.
That is the main thing. Well, I'm going to just kick right off because I know we've got a lot to get through with Price Watch. And if people do have any questions that need a resolution, as always, they can send them into pricewatch@rte.ie. So somebody has, this is the problem today. I don't know if I'm alone, but I'm increasingly annoyed with delivery companies just leaving parcels at my door if I am not in. Sometimes I even find them at the doorstep when I am in. Some of the stuff left out in the elements and at risk of being stolen was worth hundreds of euro. It's absolutely infuriating. Is there anything I can do to make sure they deliver stuff into my hands, or at the very least to a neighbour I can trust? This is not the first time I've heard this complaint.
No. I think we should start off by saying the delivery companies have done a really, really good job over the last 12 months, because there's been this massive surge in online shopping, with people unable to go into bricks and mortar shops, and people afraid to go into bricks and mortar shops, and people reliant more than ever on online purchases. So all of the delivery companies, from OnPost to DPD to Fastway to DHL to UPS, they've all been under tremendous pressure. I mean, online transactions have more than doubled in Ireland, and that means there's been more than double the number of deliveries. And not only that, but an awful lot of the deliveries that would have traditionally taken place to people's offices are now taking place to people's homes. Because I don't know about you, Catherine, but like, for instance, like I haven't been in the Irish Times since last March. But when I was in the Irish Times every day, I would typically get my parcels that I was buying online delivered to work, because it was just the easier thing to do. There was always going to be somebody there.
Yeah.
So there's been a big change now. So not only do the delivery companies have to deliver more parcels, they have to deliver them to more varied addresses. But having said that, there is a problem with how some deliveries are managed. And I know that there's a problem because I posted this query on my own social media account a couple of weeks back, and I got more than almost 1,000 responses in a couple
Stop
of days
it.
From people detailing some horrific experiences that people had. Like, there was parcels just thrown over the garden wall, and clothes ended up being shredded by dogs. High end technology was left unguarded on doorsteps. Books were left in the rain. Long-awaited parcels were just dumped in wheelie bins by couriers. And they're the horror stories that I know about. Now, for everybody who found their parcel, albeit a parcel that had been chewed on by a dog or had been left mouldering in a wheelie bin, there must be an awful lot more people who never found their parcels at all. And there were some terrible ones, like, you know, delivery companies, as I say, they would put it in the recycling bin, but they wouldn't leave a note or anything to say that it was in the recycling bin. So it would only be when you were putting the recycling out, if you happened to look into it, you'd find your parcel.
Yeah,
or
yeah.
There was other ones where, you know, people might live in apartment complexes, and the delivery guy would just randomly hand it to some guy or some woman near the apartment complex, say, can you drop that into number 7 or whatever it might be. Now, people are generally speaking good, I find. And I think it's always a better way to live your life working under that assumption that people generally speaking are good. So we have seen a lot of parcels left undisturbed on doorsteps, even in, like, you know, places like the north inner city where I live, where you'd imagine that there'd be somebody going, oh, geez, I'll take that parcel. Like, so people are generally good, but there has to be kind of a better way. Now, the question this person asks is, what can you do and what happens if things go wrong? Now, the bottom line is that if I buy a product from any company and it doesn't get to me, or it gets to me after being first eaten by my dog, well, the company who I bought the product from is ultimately responsible for ensuring the product is delivered to me in good working order. So their relationship with their delivery company really matters. Because let's say I buy an expensive phone. And in fact, one person contacted me and they had €4,500 worth of camera equipment left outside their house. Wow. Without any knowledge that they were coming. Now, if I buy something for €1,000 or €10 or whatever, and it doesn't come to me, well, then I contact the company I bought it from and I say, well, I didn't get that parcel. And there is no proof of delivery. So there is the assumption that I didn't get the parcel. So ultimately, you'd have to go to the company who you bought it from. They would have to investigate with the retailer and or the delivery company, and that's what happens because under EU law, retailers are responsible for products until they are handed to the consumer. Okay.
Wow,
so
okay.
Whatever happens, it's ultimately the retailer's fault. And I think that's maybe where we should push this, because it's the retailers who employ the delivery companies. And again, it's really important to stress that it's not all delivery companies or even all drivers. And you also have to acknowledge that the individual drivers are sometimes under huge pressure.
But obviously different delivery companies.
An awful lot of stuff to get to.
But obviously different delivery companies have different policies, no?
Well, when I contacted the delivery companies and I contacted the big ones, and they their policies are very clear that, you know, they can't just leave a parcel on a doorstep. They can't just dump it in the wheelie bin without telling you that it's in the wheelie bin. And you know, they have very strict controls in place. But given the volume of deliveries that are being made, sometimes these things fall through the cracks. Now, but for all the bad experiences, there's way more good experiences. Like, to give you an example, my wife bought something from a company, an Irish company called Designist last weekend. And she bought two or three things from Designist. Now, it's a lovely little shop on South Great George Street
yeah.
in Dublin too, right? And I've no relationship with them whatsoever. But within 3 or 4 hours, the parcel had arrived at our house, delivered by some guy driving a car. So, and I was kind of thinking, take that, Amazon, because Amazon would never top that kind of delivery. And the same story is being told by an awful lot of people who've bought off local providers who have a good relationship with both their delivery companies and all the rest. So whilst I want to make it clear that this is not every delivery company, not every delivery driver, but it is a problem. But ultimately, the issue is between the consumer who buys the product and the retailer who sells the product. And if the retailer can't get that product to you, well, then it's the retailer's fault. End of story. It's nothing to do with you. You don't have to take the hit. The one exception to that, by the way, is the likes of Parcel Motel and all those kind of intermediary companies. It's a different. If a parcel is delivered to one of those companies, well, then at that moment, the retailer ceases to have any kind of responsibility for it. But it'd be interesting to see if any of your listeners have had terrible experiences, or indeed really good experiences, like the one I've given you with the shop in George Street.
Yeah, I have to say, personally,
there are way more good experiences.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say that I have to say personally, for the last 12 months, we've had nothing but good experiences. And if something is left in the recycling bin, there's always a note in the door, or it's with the neighbour, and there's always a note in the door saying it's either left or right. The conversation that I had with the girlfriends the other night was, is it acceptable to answer the door in your pyjamas, in your dressing gown, in your towel? Like, I kind of said, well, it's
100%.
It's part of the course now. Like, I've answered the door in my towel and the hair all over the place.
Yeah.
And I'd say the poor delivery drivers have more than a story or two that they could tell about good and bad experiences of what answers the door.
I'd say so. And actually, you're right. I mean, over the last 12 months, I've had zero bad experiences with delivery companies. But also, I've got to know my neighbours on either side of me much more, because I'm taking in parcels for them. They're taking in parcels for me. So I know that one of them is shopping in this shop, or one of them has just got themselves a new phone.
Yeah, and they're judging you and you're judging them.
Taking in parcels for me. Exactly. So it is building this kind of weird community. And, you know, we just all have to get on with it.
Brilliant. All right. Conor Pope, lovely to chat to you as always. Thanks a million and chat to you again very soon. Anish Toshin, I'm the Prief Gaelton Anuakta, La Marian Ni Hulawan. Gurumila Mahagat Marian. All right, it is time for our quiz of the day, as it always is, just after 4 o'clock. And we have an amazing prize this week. Let me tell you about it again. It is two nights in the fabulous Faithleg Hotel in Waterford, where you can explore the sunny southeast with beautiful drives and beaches, cycling trails. You can head up the Waterford Greenway with a spectacular 46-kilometre off-road cycling trail on the old railway line between Waterford and Dungarvan, and you know, you enjoy two nights away, fabulous breakfast, dinner in the Roseville Rooms restaurant. What is there not to love about that? So we have got two players who are going head to head to try and win that prize. We have Tommy, who is in Walkinstown, and we have Brian, who is calling from Limerick. Tommy, I'll start with you. Good afternoon. How are you doing?
How are you, Catherine?
Sure, listen, I'm fabulous. I am absolutely flying it. It's Tuesday, we're nearly at Friday. How was the weekend for you and what were you up to today?
I was walking today and I was walking all weekend. I'm a florist.
Oh, okay. So you were busy.
Yeah, yeah. It was nice to see some people's houses when we went to deliver bouquets on over the weekend.
Oh, and do you actually do the deliveries yourself?
I did. Lovely. I did some of them over the weekend, and it was nice to see one woman's elderly woman's face when I arrived at the door. She was trying to open the porch door and she was putting her mask on, and she just had this marvellous smile across her face when she seen the bouquet, and it was nice. It cheered me up.
Oh, and you know what, it must be a lovely job to be in, because people sending people flowers because they can't physically see them, but it's just to let them know they're thinking of them. It's I'd say you've made a lot of people smile over the last 12 months.
Yeah, especially the nurses in the A&E in St Vincent's Hospital for Valentine's Day.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Lovely. I get it.
Yeah.
Fab. Are you living in Dublin, or where are you living?
I'm living in Walkinstown.
Great, okay.
Yeah.
So you'd like a few nights away in Faithleg Hotel?
I'd love a few nights away in any hotel at this stage.
And who would you take with you?
I'd take my partner.
Okay, fab.
Yeah.
Okay, well listen, hang on the line there and I'll be back to you in a minute. Brian, how are you doing, sir?
I'm great, Catherine, thanks.
Good, what are you up to today?
I'm off, I've had a few days off, back to work tomorrow.
Lovely.
Looking forward to that.
Lovely. And can I ask what line are you working in?
I work in homeless services for the SDP in Limerick City.
Oh, good for you.
I work with homeless men, yeah.
Good for you. God, you've been busy then as well.
It's been mad now. The last year has been just bananas. COVID. And busy.
And really how busy. How have you handled the situation there? Because I know it's very trying.
It was really tough at the start, but I suppose credit to our service users, our clients. They came on board really quickly, and you know, it's all about keeping each other safe, staff and service users. So, you know,
fair play to you. Fair play to you. So you're having a day off today. So have you got the feet up watching the telly, or have they got you doing jobs around the house?
I was getting the din-dins ready there.
Lovely.
I was doing some prep when I got through on the phone. So
okay. Okay. And have you ever won anything before? Are you kind of a lucky person?
I was telling your researcher that, I was lucky back in 2012. I won a trip to Vegas on the Rick O'Shea.
Oh, my God.
On 2FM.
Right.
Yeah, it was, it's just really lucky. I rang in and I just knew the answer to the question, and it was a real off-the-wall question on the Tuesday, and I was pulled out of the hat on the Friday.
And did you take the wife with you to Vegas?
I did, yeah. We went for a week.
Very good.
We had a lovely week.
I was about to ask, well, what stays and what goes on in Vegas stays in Vegas, but...
No. I probably wouldn't go back to Vegas now, having been there. It's not a place for married couples.
But you know what? I have to say, I loved Vegas, and I thought I was going to hate it. And I loved it when I went there, and I thought it was going to be a bit, out there and a bit seedy and the whole thing. But actually, the hotels are fabulous, the food is fabulous, the shows are fabulous. So it's, you know, you can kind of have a lovely weekend with your partner, you can have a lovely weekend with friends, you can have a mad weekend. It's kind of whatever you want out of it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway,
the weekend that you're going to have in Waterford is going to be relaxing, to say the least, and probably not, not Vegas, which nobody wants right now. So, Tommy and Brian, ye are going head to head. Tommy, you're player one, so I'm going to start with you. Are you ready?
I am.
Do you want to wish each other the best of luck?
Yeah, best of luck, Brian. And to you, Tommy.
All right, Tommy, first question to you. On this day in 1722, Peter the Great, the Tsar of Russia, ended a tax on men with beards. What is the capital of Russia? Is it Moscow or St. Petersburg?
Moscow, I'd say.
Is the right answer. Good man, Tommy. Well done. Brian, on this day in 1920, Austrian physicist Erwin Schrödinger got married. What is the capital city of Austria? Is it Vienna or Salzburg?
Vienna.
Is the right answer. Well done. All right. Tommy, I want you to take a listen to this tune. I can't do this all on my own. No, I know I'm no Superman. Superman. On this day in 1975, actor Zach Braff was born, and he starred in that TV sitcom for 8 seasons. Can you name the TV show?
Scrubs.
Scrubs is the right answer. Good man, Tommy. Well done. All right, Brian, over to you. Take a listen to this theme tune. On this day in 2012, actor Chris Noth got married in Hawaii. He starred in that iconic TV show which ran for 6 years. Can you name the show?
Sex and the City.
Well done. Good man yourself. All right, Tommy, back to you. You're neck and neck at this stage. On this day in 1926, Reverend Ian Paisley was born. What county was he from? Armagh or Antrim? Need an answer, Tommy?
Antrim.
Antrim is the wrong answer. Ian Paisley was from Armagh. To worry. All right, Brian, back to you. Henry Ford died on this day in 1947. He was most famous for being an automobile production pioneer. His father was born in Ireland. In what county? Was it Cork or Galway?
Cork.
Is the right answer. Good man, Brian. All right, Tommy, back to you. I want you to take a listen to this. And here's to you, Mrs. Robinson. Jesus loves you more than you will know. Whoa, whoa, whoa. God bless you, please, Mrs. On this day in 1968, the album with that song on it went straight to number one in the US album charts. Can you name who sang it? Good for you. Well done, Tommy. You're back in it. All right, Brian, here's your audio clip. Take a listen to this. Congratulations and celebrations. When I tell everyone that you're in love with me. On this day in 1968, that song came second in the Eurovision Song Contest representing the UK entry. Can you name who sang it?
Congratulations. Lulu.
No, that was Lulu with a very deep voice. That was, in fact, right. Cliff Richard. hard luck. Okay, you're neck and neck. Okay, Tommy, back in the game. On this day in 1917, the US declared war on Germany, thereby entering World War One. In what year did World War One end? 1918, 1919, or 1920?
18.
Is the right answer, Tommy.
Oh, great.
Good man, good man. Okay, Brian, to stay in the game, the tables have turned. You need to answer this one correctly. And if you do, then we have got our tiebreaker, all right? On this day in 1943, Brian, the British and US armies linked up in Africa during World War II. In what year did World War II end? Was it 1944, 1945, or 1946?
1945.
Is the right answer, lads. Well done. Whoa. We have got a tiebreaker. So we will go straight to it. And I know Fiona asked you this during the break, so we have the answer. But the tiebreaker question that we did ask you was, on this day in 1956, Kerry footballer Shawnee Walsh was born. According to Google Maps, how long would it take you to cycle from Tralee to Dingle? And we were looking for answers in hours and minutes. So, Tommy, what was your answer?
My answer was 3 hours and 20 minutes on a bike for a slow flat tire.
3 hours and 20 minutes. Yeah. Brian, what was yours?
1 hour 25 minutes.
1 hour 25.
Sean Kelly was cycling it.
1 hour 25. Okay, well, in fact, the correct answer is 2 hours 37 minutes. So that means, who was closer? Let me work this out. 2 hours 37. So, sorry, Tommy, you said 3 hours 20.
Yeah.
Okay, I have to do the quick sums here. So that's 1:17. And then, Brian, you said 2 hours 37. Jeez, I'm under pressure now with the maths, lads. I'm under pressure with the maths. That's 1 hour 15. Which means, Brian, you actually are closest with one.
Great.
Yes, so you are closest. Whew, I was under pressure there. Brian, congratulations to you. That means you are the winner. You are off to Faith Leg House. Tommy, you get a Ray D'Arcy Show mug.
Are you sure you've done the maths right on that one?
Did I do the maths right on that one? David is outside the window nodding at me. He's not sure. He's not sure now either. We're going to take a break and come back to you, right? I think that's the fairest way, because I don't accept my calculations to be 100% correct.
No problem.
All right.
Congratulations to Brian.
Hang on the line there. Hang on the line. We'll be back after this.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Well, lads, Stuart's inquiry, the white smoke has the white smoke is out. And in fact, we have made a mistake. And yes, unfortunately, Tommy, you are Brian. Unfortunately, that means that I have gotten it wrong. And Tommy, you are heading to Faith Leg House.
Sorry, Brian.
In Waterford.
But not about it.
You were right to question us, Tommy. You were dead right.
I thought I was closer.
you're dead right. Listen, well done. We just got the maths wrong on that. But listen, congratulations. Fair play to you. Thanks for being such good sports. And enjoy your weekend away, Tommy.
I will. You can tell Ryan Tubberty that I'm not so bad at the quiz. Because the last time I was on his programme, I got all the answers wrong at Christmas.
No, there you go. You turn the tables around. Listen, enjoy the weekend.
Cheerio.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Emil. All right, let's get some music. That is brilliant band, Irish band Wild Youth, who are making serious waves at the moment. And I absolutely love their stuff. Okay, Home of the Year, the Home of the Year finale is on RTE1 tonight at 8:30. I have been living for this. We will have white smoke. We had white smoke with our quiz. We will have white smoke tonight for the Home of the Year finale. And architect judges Hugh Wallace and Amanda Bone join us on the line. Good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon.
How are you doing?
Very good, very good. Listen, thanks for joining us. And there are a lot of people very excited tonight, including me. We were chatting upstairs. A lot of people got into Line of Duty. For me, the last couple of weeks, keeping me sane, has been Home of the Year. I've very much thoroughly enjoyed it. So, Amanda, coming to you first. It's your first year as a judge. And fair play to you. It's been brilliant. What was it like, you know, coming into a show that was established and having to put your own stamp on it, really? And, you know, we can tend to sort of, Irish people don't really like a lot of change when they're used to something. So was that quite daunting for you?
It was, you know, when I was first asked to do it, I was kind of really apprehensive because I'd never done TV before. And then I just sat back and thought about it because I love being an architect. I love my profession, but at the same time, it can be a very stressful and a very laborious job. So I thought, well, here's a chance to use what I know and have a bit of fun.
Mm.
And particularly given the year that it was, I think there's very few people can actually put their hand up and say they had fun during the pandemic.
Yeah.
Also, I'd watched the show since the very start. And well, my mum and myself would always disagree with this about what was what won, what didn't. And then I always disagreed with the judges, particularly Hugh. So when I was asked to do it, I said, look, why not give it a shot?
And what you've done is great, because you've been, I mean, it's the thing that people talk about, I suppose. You're very forthright in your opinions, as are all of the judges, I have to say, which is why it's so good and why it's so entertaining. And as well, because you can see all three of you have your individual styles. You know what you like, you know what you don't like. And that's kind of the beauty of it, that you know, very much your personalities can come through as well, and your styles, you know, your styles can come through too.
Yeah, well, I thought kind of my aim when I went on the show was, look, I'm just going to be completely open and I'm going to be honest and just say what I really felt. Because my aim about it was to actually generate a conversation, and rather than just go into a home and go, lovely, but to actually maybe kind of think about things a bit more and generate, as I said, a conversation about architecture, about design, and to, you know, have more of an in-depth discussion, as well, of course, you know, having a bit of fun and being an entertainment show. But it was to, yeah, just to try and kind of further the conversation, I think.
Mm. And it's just when you say there, you know, I want to go in and just say what I think, you know, and I think maybe as Irish people, we don't do that. And especially on national television, a lot of the time when you're talking about people's homes, which are so personal, and people have put not just months into these projects, but sometimes years, that if there's a style that maybe is not particularly for you, do you feel... do you kind of have to watch? I mean, I feel that you don't watch what you say, which is why it's great. But there's the sort of the personal element as well of not wanting to offend or insult people, I'd imagine.
Oh, no, absolutely. And that's never my intention, because I have the utmost respect for any of the homeowners and the homes that we went into. It was an incredible opportunity to get in and have a look at these houses. I suppose in one way, I'd be coming at it from a kind of a different point of view from a lot of people, because as an architect, you're educated through what's called constructive criticism. And that isn't a negative. On the contrary, it's a positive. It's about, you know, the idea of trying to improve everything, to look at everything. It's about progressing and making your work better. And then as a practicing architect, you have to be highly critical of your own work if you want to produce anything beautiful.
Mm.
So I suppose as an architect, criticism, we'd see it as something that's positive, that generates beautiful work and kind of improves on everything. So when I go into somebody's home, absolutely not. I mean, I was completely flabbergasted by the efforts and some of the houses that we went into. But also, you know, we're in there filming over the course of a day, and the show is, you know, narrowed down to a couple of minutes.
Mm.
So, you know, a lot of what we've said mightn't make the cut as well.
Mm-mm. Well, Hugh, coming to you, you've welcomed your new judges with open arms, I think the show, which is such a beloved show, has grown again in strength this year. Would you agree?
Yeah. Oh, it's amazing. And I think having Susie and Amanda coming in as two new judges has given just a completely different perspective on, you know, what we comment and what we talk about. And if anything, I think this year there's a lot more learning and, if you like, tricks of the trade have been given away in terms of colour or design or detail. And I think that's great. And also, like, the three of us have great fun off camera.
You can see that, and I think.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, we didn't go for our dinners this year, which we usually do. But you know, you're together for 21 days and you get on, you do disagree. We're very much honest in our taste and what we do and don't like. And that's what's made the programme very special this year. And as Amanda said there, you know, and Susie, you know, the 21 homeowners, we have to thank them very much, because they've put in such a supreme effort to get their homes ready for this competition. And really, all three of us, you know, we've had our breath taken away. I think you'd agree with that, Amanda. Like, the quality of the houses is just fabulous.
Well, absolutely. I mean, any of the seven that made the final are worthy winners. And to be honest, there was many more homes in the competition that easily could have won. I had, you know, even though I've watched this show for 7 years since it started, I had no idea of the level of or the quality of the homes and particularly the effort that people put in. The interesting thing about the show is that it's very different experiencing the homes when you're there than watching it on TV, because a lot of the homes, it's about kind of walking in. It's about the atmosphere.
It's about the feel of a place.
Whereas, yeah, this sometimes doesn't translate to television, or sometimes the homes mightn't look as good on TV as they are in person. Yeah. But like, as I said, and the amount of work that people actually did themselves, you know, there's one thing about paying somebody else to do it, but a lot of these homeowners were down on their hands and knees, you know, getting specialist paint to paint shower screens and tiles.
And you know what? That's what I totally got from the show this year, the passion from the homeowners. And I would imagine even bringing them all together, the seven finalists even to go through those houses. But also you will each have your favourites. So, I mean, even in terms of fighting for that passion and those people and those houses and those projects, are we going to, like, was it, how long did you film in order to kind of make your decisions, and did you have to come in like fresh faced with your motivational speeches ready to try and kind of put your best foot forward to fight for the houses that you want to win?
Well, absolutely. Sorry, Amanda, go ahead.
Sorry, no, it reminded me of when I was a child and standing on the starting line of a 100-metre race, my stomach was in knots, and you're naturally really competitive for the home that you want to win.
Hmm. Would you agree,
yeah,
Hugh?
Yeah, and that was the great thing about it, was, you know, trying to eye up your other judges and decide which home they wanted to get through and into the final three, you know?
Yeah.
And that was, and there was nail-biting moments, and people threw their pram, the toys out of the pram. And, you know, and I'm looking forward to seeing the show tonight because I haven't seen it.
Mm.
So I think there's an excitement in actually watching the show as it goes out, because you don't know who's going to win.
Mm. Absolutely. Well, listen, it has been brilliant, as I said, a great entertainment. And again, I think just because there is so many people right now who are looking to either kind of redo their houses, or you know, buy out of the city, or scale down or scale up or do their garden, you know, it is a big topic of conversation for people as well. And I think just in terms of inspiration and, you know, the amount that you can do yourself with a lot of hard work and a little bit of research and a bit of imagination, that's why I think it's kind of been inspiring for people. So looking forward to it. Thanks for joining us, guys. That is the Home of the Year finale. It's on RTE1 at 8:30 tonight, and we're all looking forward to that. So that is all from me today. Drive Time is next with Cormac, and I will be back tomorrow.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Wash your hands.